Good morning. I know that Jewish Community Center very well that Ernest just mentioned. I used to work there tutoring the first wave of Southeast Asian refugees who were coming in the 80s for some time. And the Jewish Community Center opened their doors and made the facilities available, I think at no cost at all, to the organizations that were there to help. I know the place well. I often like to read two versions of the same story. I've done it a couple of times here already. A children's version for the sprites and an adult version for the rest of us. So now after reading Donald Hall's little book, Oxcart Man, for the kids, I'll read Hall's original poem. Here's his Oxcart Man as it first appeared. In October of the year, he counts potatoes dug from the brown field, counting the seed, counting the seller's portion out, and bags the rest on the cart's floor. He packs wool sheared in April, honey in combs, linen, leather tanned from deer hide, and vinegar in a barrel, hooked by hand at the forge's fire. He walks by his ox's head 10 days to Portsmouth Market and sells potatoes, and the bag that carries potatoes, flax seed, birch brooms, maple sugar, goose feathers, yarn. When the cart is empty, he sells the cart. When the cart is sold, he sells the ox, harness, and yoke, and walks home, his pockets heavy with the year's coin for salt and taxes. Not mentioned in our church. And at home, by fire's light in November cold, he stitches new harness for next year's ox in the barn and carves the yoke and saws planks for building the cart again. What a lovely portrait of work well done in a year well spent in healthy, productive labor. It's a perfect poem for Labor Day. Let's return to it soon and work our way inside more deeply after we sing. You'll see an insert in your order of service that has the words. It has the adult version of the Big Rock Candy Mountains. Not the children's version that we might have heard from Burl Ives years ago. That was a little bit cleaned up. But the Big Rock Candy Mountain was written by Harry McClintock, also known as
Haywire Mac.
And this is a ho-ho song and a labor song and a protest song all at once. So, you know what? Let's join in.
Thank you.
chorus.
Let's sing the chorus one more time. I might have missed something. In the big rock and the mountain, there's a land that's filled with light. Still too far to reach on foot unless you plan to camp there and go home next morning, which didn't sound that bad to some kids. Well, I wanted my license, but I was not overly eager for it. Shortly after getting hers, my sister had damaged our father's car by dragging the side along a "may I have your order" intercom box at a fast food place. I remember that horrible scraping sound that just went on forever. Well, white door crease and lost paint. And our father died. After a few months of getting fattened up by my Italian grandmother, my uncle's family had taken us in. And I, when I reached that age, dreaded doing damage to his car. He ran a gas station when those still did most repairs, and sure, he could fix it. But how would I live that down? Still, he was insistent that I go ahead and complete the process after finishing driver's education. Some of my friends who cared much more about driving had taken two or three tries to pass the test. Maybe because I was less invested in it, I was a little calmer, though my heart was hammering when the examiner, this huge, scary man about who I've been warned, better hope you don't get that guy, when he pointed out a couple of mistakes I'd made. And then he said, "Okay, go and get your license." My uncle had driven me over, but now he offered to let me drive us home. I was too drained for that, so he took the wheel instead and asked me, "So what are your plans for the weekend?" I said, that's an altered state of consciousness. It was hard to think that far ahead, but I said, "I don't know. Maybe I'll borrow the car and go to the mall or something," forgetting that the gas station was open that day and that he would need it. He said, "No, that's not what you'll be doing. Starting Saturday, you've got a job." He needed someone to work the drive, to pump gas, pull cars into the service bays, pull them out and park them, maybe even drive a customer home and then go get them when their car was done. That person had to be able to drive legally. That person was me. How could I say no? My uncle and his wife had been so kind to take me and my sister in when they still had a daughter at home, to add us to their family care and care for all of our needs. I wanted to help him with his work, and I quickly grew to enjoy it. My friends at that time were the high school poets and folk musicians, artists and rebels from white collar homes. I knew that there was a certain cool that came with wearing my blue-collar gas station shirt with the name Ron over the pocket. Everyone called me Ron, and I enjoyed this alter ego. When my Craig shirts finally came in, I found reasons not to wear them, because I loved being Ron when my friends came in for gas. I also enjoy the work, even though I paid $1.69 an hour at first, even when it became full-time over the summer. 10 hours, 6 days a week, 15 hours if a night shift guy got sick. We had a contract to service the town's police cars, and I enjoyed meeting the cops, some of whom had also worked for my uncle when they were younger. I enjoyed meeting those on the other side of the law, guys, new guys, who did all sorts of things. I was offered expensive items at very low prices. But you gotta take 50, Ronnie. Keep one, unload the rest, and make some real money for a change. You guess where I grew up? Chicago, right? My well-bred suburban friends loved the stories, and I loved telling them. But most of all, I loved the way the work made me feel connected. I lived as a white-collar kid myself when I was little. My dad had been a lawyer. How could I have helped him with work like that? Or even understood? Same thing for my friends with their professional parents. So I felt like I was the lucky kid. I saw how helping my uncle helped the whole household, the economy, and the spirit of our home. We helped keep the police cars moving in pursuit of the outlaws, who also bought our gas, literally, the Chicago outlaws bought our gas. It all connected, not quite like it does for the Oxcart man and his family, but better than anything I've known before. It's a feeling that's hard to come by. That's why the Oxcart Man's story makes me both happy and sad. My heart aches with longing at the perfect economy in the life of that family. They care for everything, yet they're attached to no one thing except their life together. Materials and animals are flowing through the household constantly. Make the goods, take them to market in the cart pulled by the ox, sell them, sell the cart, sell the ox. Walk home and start the process all over again. Everyone contributed. Everything coordinated. How could you say no to work like this? But how can you find such work today? Last year, I met an extraordinary man named Carson, who lives near where I am. Lives in Jefferson, actually. And he teaches bow making to students from around the country and sends his handmade custom bows around the world. I was delighted to see how his kids played around his workshop, how they understood what Daddy does and could see how he does it, working in a shade forest, just like the Oxcart Man's. One day, they just might do it too. Who knows? But this is something rare today, when work and home, adult and child, can be so disconnected. Some people imagine that people would not work at all if they could avoid it. There's a poem from Europe in the 1300s that imagines a land called Caucania, where no one needs to work. There, poultry and fish are found pre-cooked and seasoned, and a house has many rooms and halls, pies and pasties form the walls, made with rich fillings, fish and meat, the tastiest a man could eat. Flower cakes are the shingles all, of cloister, chamber, church, and hall, the nails are puddings, rich and fat. Kings and princes might dine on that. And you might at some time have heard an American hobo song by Harry McClintock, also known as Haywire Mac, about the Big Rock Candy Mountains where never changes stops and the little streams of alcohol come trickling down the rocks. The brake men have to tip their hats to the homeless wandering man. That's what he means. When the railroad bulls are blind, there's a lake of stew and whiskey too. You can paddle around in a big canoe in the Big Rock Candy Mountains. And there are also jails made of tin. And you can walk right out again as soon as you walk in. There ain't no short-handled shovels, no axes, saws, or picks. I'm bound to stay where you sleep all day, where they hung the jerk that invented work in the Big Rock Candy Mountains. It's really not like a children's version. So you said that already. And I don't think that the work itself is the issue here. It's lousy work. ill-equipped and ill-paid work under dehumanizing conditions, those short-handled shovels. You might remember that the farm workers movement got started in a protest, among other things, about using heavy short-handled hoes, right, which were back-breaking to work. So, yeah, it worked better for the owners, not so well for the people that do the work. Yeah, ill-paid, ill-equipped work under dehumanizing conditions that connects to nothing but survival. I'm surprised that Haywire Mack had nothing to say about taxes, though I guess hobos would have paid him. Have you ever seen an I Heart Taxes bumper sticker? You want one? You want to put that on your car? You get dirty looks for your political bumper stickers. You want to try this one? Nobody loves them or even likes them, but you might have noticed that the Oxcart Man budgets for them in the Home for Adults. As he walks home, his pockets heavy with the year's coin for salt and taxes. I like that in a poem, salt and taxes. The children's story puts wintergreen candy in those pockets, sweet and delightful, but salt and taxes have a mature taste. One, the salt, connects us back to life's origin in the ocean, and the other connects us with what? With others, with their work and their lives, and keeping up the commons that we share, like roads and bridges and certain pooled resources for help in hard times or old age. Someday all that sawing and walking and stitching will be too much for Mr. and Mrs. Oxcart. And who knows if their children will have survived to help them. With a walk in an old cemetery. Yeah. Look at the ages. That's what we all do when we walk through. We look at the headstones, you calculate the age, right? And look how many. 2 years old, 4 years old. Yeah. Who knows if their children would have survived to help them? Taxes can help provide some sort of, what should we call it? How about social security? Some people see taxes as a form of stealing. And some spend their days on TV or the radio teaching us to see them that way too. That's their work, I guess, serving up a sort of mental fast food. It's always the same sandwich. Love religion, so long as it's the Jesus religion. Hate taxes, hate liberals, and love guns. No, love, hate, hate, love. I don't know if that's a hate sandwich or a love one, but I do know that it has many eager consumers. Most seem unaware that Jesus had a soft spot for tax collectors. The Apostle Matthew made his living as one. He was a publican from the Latin word that meant of the people. Publicans were private contractors, small businessmen who collected money on behalf of the Roman government in occupied Palestine. Later in Europe, they were known as tax farmers, and they got to keep a percentage of whatever they collected in the name of the crown. Some were honest, but many were corrupt, often using violence or the threat of violence to enrich themselves. Tax farming was tried briefly in the U.S. under U.S. Grant, Ulysses S. Grant's administration. Though it proved a dismal failure in the 1870s, a recent administration proposed bringing it back again in 2004, but nobody seems to remember who was president at that time. Was Grant one of them, that other? I'm surprised the idea didn't fly, at least on right-wing TV and radio. What a perfect way of needing to mix getting rich with Jesus and with guns. Make fast money as an armed Christian tax collector, packing a gun and a crucifix with I Heart Jesus on your bumper. I can see a hit reality show alongside Dog, the Bounty Hunter, and Cops, Honey Boo Boo. How about Publican Posse? Featuring shootouts between private collectors and tax resisters, with everyone shielded from prosecution by the spread of stand your ground laws to let you shoot if you feel threatened. And what's more threatening than taxes? What a show that could be. Make taxation popular by making it entertaining. be much better to make it meaningful. Like it is to the oxcart man with his pockets heavy with the year's coin for salt and taxes. We feel that the case for their benefit has been made for him in a clear and sober way, much better than it has been made for us. We need to do a better job of this so we can all feel like he does, that this is part of the flow of both economy and life in a world that we share with others. We've got to do a much better job with that teaching. Speaking of jobs, if someday I find that I can't do this work anymore, I hope I can find work like the oxcart man's. It doesn't sound easy, but it feels complete, completely integrated from day to day, year to year, and person to person. I know he's an imaginary figure, but he's a powerful one because there's something about his family's life that feels so possible. This could happen. We may not know anyone quite like this family, but there's also something so familiar about them. Life and work could be like this. Seems like it used to be, at least for some. Maybe it can be so again, for all of us, in time. How does your work feel to you? How does your work feel to you? That's a good thing to think about on Labor Day weekend. With a day off today and one tomorrow too, I hope, though I know that's not true for everyone. Maybe you'd like to close your eyes to do it. Think about it. How does your work make you feel connected to the earth and its creatures, to life and other people? Does this community of ours have a kind of work that's all its own? Does it have that? I don't know yet. I'm just starting to learn my way around here. Does the work of this community make you feel connected to other communities? Maybe you are more like the oxcart man than you might have thought when you first heard the story. Why? How could that be so? Because your work is holy. Your work is holy. There's a religious quality to everything about that industrious family. Their work may seem old-fashioned next to ours, but what we do can have that same religious quality. You know what religion means, right? Obligation, bond, reverence. It's most likely from a Latin word, religare, that means to bind, to tie it all together, to make connections. To make connections or at least to recognize them. The lig part of the word is like what you hear in the word ligament. Not just string or thread for stitching next year's harness, but a living kind of fiber that pulls it all together. Shave horse, ox cart, birch broom, all connected, reconnected, religiously, religare. Okay. Thank you for the work you do this year and the next. Work hard, work well, work alive and awake, and aware that your work is holy. So many people.